My name is Rob. I'm an alcoholic. I had a problem with alcohol from a very young age. The problem being there was not enough, and when there was not enough time in the day to drink. I was told I had a problem. I was told by the courts, my parents. My first rehab I was in, I was 16 years old, in a nice cushy place in Pasadena, California. But I didn't see it for what it was. It took me 20 years to realize, after many trips to institutions, jail, you name it. I've been to jail multiple times, probably a dozen or so. I've been in the hospital behind it. I have, you know the story. Twenty years later, after my first rehab at 36 years old, I decided on my own to get help and checked myself into a rehab. And I did what they said and got myself a sponsor. And the way I went through the steps with the sponsor was kind of off the wall, which is exactly what that was. And I'm here to tell you it almost took me out and almost killed me. If I had drank again or used, I would have probably have not made it back here. The magic started for me when I met a gentleman. I had my eye on him probably a year before I asked for help. And he took me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, where I found out what my problem really is. I could not stop drinking once I took the first drink. For me, that was very early in the morning. I related to the stories in the book, especially the guy with the milk and whiskey. Only mine was coffee and whiskey. And I would take a shooter in with me to work, and 2 hours later, first break, I'd be at the lick getting my first 12-pack of the day. And that's how my life went for a very long time. You can imagine the unmanageability, big word, that came behind that. I couldn't hold a job for 2 years. That was my max. 2 years, my employers were tired of me, and some of those were family. I could not function in interpersonal relationships. And especially without alcohol. I did not know who I was, what I am, and I had a hard problem relating to people, you know. The powerlessness of the first drink was in many areas of my life, not only in drinking. And it took me to some very dark, dark places. And when I got into the big book, I could relate right away to some of the stories in there. I had no idea what the phenomenon of craving or the mental obsession was until I sat across from another man and it was spelled out to me. The book talks about the true from the false, and that's exactly where I was for a very long time. I thought I was the life of the party. I was the guy 10 feet from the keg at all times. Always had backup liquor. Always drank before I went to a function. Just so I can drink more at the function. This to me wasn't alcoholism. This to me was having a good time. I wonder how many times I could say, So unmanageability was, for me, landing in jail I used to split rent. I used to be late. I'd pay half one in my current month and another half in the next month. That would get me a $50 fine. I had a tab at my liquor store. And I was broke before I got paid. I don't know how I paid my power bills all the time. I remember one time going for 5 months without paying it. And I've, seeked out money another way to pay for things. By going through the book, I regained some power. And that for me is God. And without God, I don't have any power whatsoever. I've been sober for a little over 6 years now. March 22nd, 2007 is my sobriety date. That does not go to say that powerless and unmanageability is not in my life today. I'm right in the thick of it today. I got some big news November 4th, 2012, last year, that I have a 20-year-old daughter. And you can imagine range of emotions that I couldn't control behind that. This 20-year-old girl wanted to meet me. She's been asking about me since her 15th birthday, March 20th, 2007. It's 2 days before I sobered up. And I wrestle with this. Where the powerlessness shows up as I wrestle is from God all the time. And if I don't keep God at the forefront and I don't communicate with my sponsor and I don't see you people in the rooms, God's out the window. And I get into selfishness and self-centeredness. And what that looks like for me is I work 70 hours a week and I'll seek out work. And I will go to the gym instead of maybe hitting a meeting, looking for the new guy to help out. And my life is unmanageable behind that because I can't sort out my feelings if I'm not talking to you, if I'm not dealing with my sponsor, if I'm not 10-stepping on it every day. I'm holding all that stuff in. You know, if you know anyone or if you had this experience, all of a sudden you have a daughter or a son way down the road, please talk to me. Because I'm hopeless and helpless behind this. And by not talking to my sponsor about it, being unmanageable in my own life, and being powerlessness and holding on to it, not letting God in, not working steps around it, I get in a very dark, unhappy place. And I know the way out, and I can't get there. I can't. You know, thank God that I am here this weekend because I need this. I need this program. I need to know how to figure out how to sort this out. And I know when I'm in selfishness and self-centeredness and I'm powerless and unmanageable, that's Rob's will. There is no God is with Elvis, and they left the building. It is good to be among family here at the Fellowship of the Spirit. Thank you.
All right, our next panelist is Dallas Jay from the Solid Foundations Group in Denver, Colorado.
Thank you all. I just recently celebrated my 11th year in Al-Anon, And as part of that celebration, I went to my home group and I said, we're going to talk about the first step. Because that's where I am all the time. That's where I am now. I've been through the 12 steps. I've been through the 12 steps in Al-Anon using a blue book that I won't talk about. And I've been through it in AA using the big book, and thank God for the big book. Because that helped me so much to get through and to get to the base of what I was really worried and taking, what was eating my lunch, what was killing me. I came, the blessing of the big book was what helped me get through it. I'm here to talk about being powerless. Almost, 45 years ago, a little over 45 years ago, I married a young lady who's beautiful, and I was very happy, and I guess she wasn't. Whatever, but life goes on. But over time, she drank more and more and more and more, and I did what I could to keep up with her. And finally, I realized I can't drink with this woman. I cannot do this. Now, it took almost 20 years to do that, so I quit drinking. One day, I said, I'm not going to drink anymore. I can't do this. I pass out. I don't do things right. One Christmas, I went to a friend's house and came out of the friend's house and passed out in the snowbank. And somebody came and took me home. But she was fine. She was doing okay, you know. And I was doing okay, and there was no problems in our life. But so I quit drinking mostly at her. You know, you got to stop drinking and look what I can do. All right. No control issues with me at all. But to make it, to keep going on, that was the way my life I lived. I wanted to control what was going on around me. I had no problems that couldn't be solved if you guys would straighten up your behavior. I was, you know, in that situation. I was always there. I was always there. My first sponsor, God bless him, he helped me realize that my problem wasn't me. Wasn't them, it was me. Sorry. I'm going to say that again. The problem wasn't them, it was me. It was in here and in here, and it was my desire to make sure that everybody conformed and did the things the way they should be done, because I knew the way they should do everything. I don't really care what it was you were doing. I had an opinion about it. And I would share it with you whether you wanted it or not. And that wasn't always well received. Sometimes people said, shut up, you old, you know, and other things. But it's a family conference. The whole idea that I'm trying to say is that when I came in, I was on my knees. I was down. I was out. I had done everything I could. I stopped drinking at her. I stopped smoking at her. I stopped doing everything except getting crazier and crazier and crazier. I would get up in the morning and I would brush my teeth and I would start thinking about the people I was mad at while brushing my teeth. And so I have some receding gums, probably because I was trying to wipe them out with a toothbrush. So that went on. I'd get in my car, and thank God we didn't live on a street where I had to back out into traffic, because I never would have gotten out safely, because damn it, I'm coming, you know. I drive downtown in Denver, and I get on Spear Boulevard, and everybody was going so damn slow, you know, and I really thought the speed limit there was 78. You know, I don't know why 78, but it seemed reasonable to me, especially at rush hour. But we'll not go into that either. I don't know how I didn't get killed, murdered, or create so many accidents that, I didn't make it. I had troubles at work. Wasn't a particularly good employee because my resentment, my anger came out too often. I became very habitual, a liar about everything that was going on in my life. I had the perfect life, to hear me tell it. But I'd get home and she'd be drunk. That's not my problem. My problem was the way I responded to it. And then I'd go on and pretend the next day that everything was just fine. Without getting into too many details, I'm a slow learner, and 35 years into the marriage, I decided I've had enough. And part of that was that we had gone, I had taken her to the hospital, to the emergency room, one day, and she got mad at them and would not stay. And we went home, and she started throwing up blood the next day. And we went back to the hospital, and they said, you have a severely perforated ulcer. You are, you've dumped all your gastric contents into your abdomen, your septic, and you may die. And they didn't say that to her because she was passed out, but they said that to me. So I went nuts. I went absolutely crazy. I was bouncing off walls. I came out of talking to the doctor, and the only thing I could pray was that she'd make it through the night. Well, I did that, and I've got 2 minutes, so I'll make it short. But the social worker said, there's an AA and an Al-Anon meeting on York Street, just a few blocks away. Go. It was a Sunday morning. And that's the first meeting I went to. And I came out of that meeting, and I was going, wow, these people have had things go bad for them. We had a intervention, did not go well. And I finally said, I cannot change her. I cannot change anything going on. I have to be able to live with myself. And that's where it comes down to admitting you were powerless over alcohol. My life was unmanageable. That didn't mean I didn't have a job. That didn't mean that I, wasn't paying the bills. That didn't mean that I lived in a fairly nice house. What it did mean was that I was, as I've said in my home group many times, alternately homicidal and suicidal. And if I couldn't kill them, I was going to kill me. And thank God for waiting periods on guns, because I probably would have used one. But the truth is, this is where the action is. This is where my life has begun. It has begun here in Al-Anon. It has begun with the 12 steps. It's begun with that realization that I'm screwed up. There's a word I usually use, but I won't. That I am messed up, and that I cannot, I can't do it. I just can't do it. I am defeated. And I am defeated now, and sometimes less defeated than others, but I still am powerless over anything other than my own effort to be in recovery. And after 11 years, it's better than it was. And it'll be better after 12, and I'm sure it'll be better after 20 if I make it. Thank you.
All right, and our next participant is Joni G. from the Attitude Adjustment Group in Denver, Colorado.
Can we put this? Hi, my name is Joni. I'm a short alcoholic. I'm going to break stuff. I got duped into speaking because he's like, oh, there's not going to be that many people here. You'll be okay. And I was like, can I bring Jeffrey up here? And he's like, I'd rather you didn't. I'll be celebrating 6 months next week. Thank you. So this is my first time speaking in front of so many people. I grew up with an alcoholic stepfather, and my mom went to Al-Anon. So she, we kind of grew up in a setting knowing a little bit about alcoholism, but not a whole lot. And the term functioning alcoholic was used a lot. And that resonated a ton with me because I, the powerlessness and unmanageability were two terms I thought I knew. Because I thought I had both of those under wraps. Because I was doing well, I looked good, had the job, things were good. I mean, terminology meant everything to me. Challenge me in words with friends, I dare you. So it was just, it was really important to me because I knew what that meant. And I think powerlessness only took effect once my health started declining. I don't have any power over how much I can drink to maintain my drunkenness so I don't do, A, B, and Z. Or I don't know how much I can drink, after I got pancreatitis. So should I just drink wine now? So I lost the power to manipulate quantities and what I was drinking and how I could drink and who I could drink with. And so that was powerlessness to me. And unmanageability, that didn't even exist because I had a great car, I had a great job, I had a great loft. And the worse my health declined, the more I went to great lengths to look better and to get better things. And material things became very important to me. And it was just all about looking good. I felt just, I was eroding on the inside, but I needed to look good. And I did that for a very long time. So I was your functioning alcoholic. I used to, I told my sponsor I would have died before my family had intervention. Because, I went to great lengths to make sure that I talked fine, I looked fine, everything was just fine. So I got to sit down with somebody who was like, it's all in the way that you think. It's what you think about those words. Those words are not what you think they mean. So a 400-pound book that's 150 years old, we got to sit down with that every day and go through those words and redefine the way I thought about them and deconstruct what powerlessness meant and what unmanageability meant and what it meant to me. And just being able to shed a completely different light on that. The way that I wasn't managing my health, I hadn't been in detox, hadn't had a DUI, hadn't had any of those tangible repercussions of alcohol. But I'd had pancreatitis, and, brushing my teeth was a chore because I was always throwing up and I couldn't keep food down. And I was not managing my health at all. And powerlessness to the point where alcohol had affected every facet of my life. It affected who I chose to be around. It affected, to the extent of going to the grocery store, shopping for the foods that I knew I'd be able to eat when I was hungover. I could never eat that, so I have to pick macaroni and cheese. It affected every aspect of my life. If I needed to drive somewhere, then I would not go to family functions. I wasn't aware until I went through the book and started reconstructing how those words meant to me, that I was able to see. My life was completely unmanageable, every facet of it. I wasn't managing my business as a real estate agent. I did not have repeat clientele. Once the deal was done, they're like, she's freaking crazy. She was like MIA for most of it. We almost didn't close. The deal closed for me. Check was in the bank. We're good to go. But I didn't have that. Nobody wanted to work with me. My family did not want to have anything to do with me. I was not managing those relationships with people. My nieces were growing up and didn't have a clue. If I couldn't drink, if it got to the point where people knew that I was going to be drunk by the time I got there, then I just wouldn't show up. So, towards the end, I didn't even see my family. And I'd surrounded myself around people that drank like I did. And when I, for I don't know what brought me to the point that I mean, my health was just at such a point where I physically couldn't drink. I mean, I couldn't drink. I couldn't not drink. If I drank, I was sick. If I didn't drink, I was sick. I give up. Like, I don't know what to do. So I had reached that point, and one of my really, really good friends, he had a lot of health issues. I mean, we were pretty much tit for tat. I mean, we had very much the same type of alcoholic story, same types of consequences on the inside, you know, going to great lengths to keep the facade looking good. And I was ready. For whatever reason, I have no idea, but I was ready. And I called up my aunt, who is an active alcoholic who thinks she's cured from alcoholism, and I said, I don't know what to do. I'm stuck. Can I come over to your house? And I just need to sleep for a couple days, and I need to go to a meeting. And so I went to AA that one night, and my friend came with me the next day, and he was like, yeah, I love this. This is great. We're going to do it. And he never came back. And so, you know, I met a wonderful sponsor who, you know, getting sober, I feel, was pretty easy because I physically could not put alcohol in my body anymore. That wasn't the solution for anything anymore. And so now I had to learn to live sober, and that was the hardest part. Because like I was telling you, it was deconstructing everything I knew. Everything I knew about why I drank or what the alcohol really does to me. And that's what's so amazing about having a sponsor. She gets to iron this stuff out for me. Just, you know, very, very simple things that come up about, you know, just I'm used to dodging things. And that was a huge part of my alcoholic past, is just not dealing with it. Not dealing with it. They called me the big party planner because I would create these elaborate parties with my family, and then I was too drunk to go. I was like nowhere there. And so it became, so, you know, it's amazing to me that now I have somebody that can just help me kind of figure out the sobriety stuff. You know, just dealing with being a self-employed person, and I have a lot of time on my hands, and figuring out that I need to get those slots filled. We need to get this going and not be hanging out at home. I have an office now and working towards accountability for that. And I get to learn new words like frothy, and that's 46 points, by the way. So just being open is basically what it is. Being open to work in that through, and not thinking you know all the answers. Thanks.
All right, and our next participant is Carla L. from the Healing Hearts Group in Ragley, Louisiana.
Anybody in here been nervous? I just celebrated 2 years in Al-Anon. I'm so grateful. So very grateful. I guess all my problems and out of controlness and unmanageability started many, many, many years ago. And I was married to a drinking husband, and things just progressively got worse year after year after year. And what was bad was I liked him better drinking than I did when he wasn't. But anyway, so that's a whole nother subject. But anyway, it just, after 98, I got divorced. Found myself alone. And I think I have a little bit of a control issue, too. So I said, okay, I'll just get another relationship. So I jumped on in there and got me another relationship. When it got a little too comfortable, whoop, I was out. I get me another one, boop, I was out. Got me another one, and boop, I was out again. And somebody asked me, said, Carla, why don't you stay in a relationship more than... And when they said that, I realized every relationship got to a certain point, whether it was months or years or situation or whatever, and then, boop, I had to get out. It was getting, you know, I couldn't handle it. It was too scary, and, you know, I couldn't think about getting into that kind of situation again. And so through the years, it got easier to just stay alone. And in 2003, I got a phone call from my brother, and he says, I'd like you to come up to Colorado for an AA conference. And he says, I'm chairing. I'm like, hey, it sounds fantastic. I'll be there. I had no idea what I was walking into. I'm here every year. I kept coming back, and I kept asking questions. I kept talking to people. I'd go home, and I would think about things people shared. And I'd say, no, I'm not Al-Anon. I don't need to be an Al-Anon. And then the next year, I'd come back, and I'd cry. And I'd cry all weekend. And I'd go home, and my kids would say, Mama, you're such a big titty baby. Can't help it. So about 3 years ago, my kids, they're grown, decided we're going to give Mama the push, shove she needs. So behind my back, they put me a profile on eHarmony. They picked out Mama's prettiest picture and everything, and my daughter decided, oh, nobody knows Mama better than me. I can do her profile. So she did. And a week later, they all come over to my house, and they said, Mama, we got a surprise. They said, we put you on eHarmony, and there's 12 men want to talk to you. I totally, totally came unhinged on my children. I told them off. I told them how it was going to be. They didn't have no rights. And I sat at my table for an hour and a half and just cried. And that was the defining point. That was the moment I knew everything about my life was unmanageable. And I was like, okay, I need help. You know, and I told the kids, I said, I appreciate that y'all want to help me, but that's not my answer. Another man in my life is not the answer. You know? And but I went from that moment on, and I came back again to this conference, and I asked some serious, serious questions with some serious people, and some wonderful people were there for me, and they gave me some names, and they gave me a phone number to go home and call, and that was 2 years ago, and no looking back. I'm not 100%, but I don't expect to be, you know, but I am progressing. I have days now that I can actually say, could there possibly be a man in my life without me crying about it? And I am so very grateful for this opportunity. Wow. If anybody would have ever told me that coming 10 years ago would put me in this spot today. I love every one of y'all. I don't know y'all, but I love y'all. And I'm so grateful y'all are here. Thank y'all.
I'd like to say thank you to each of our panelists. And for those that are unfamiliar, there's a microphone out there. If anyone from the audience cares to share a brief experience with the First Step, feel free to step up to the microphone. We still have 20 minutes, so.
My name's Mickey. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank you very much for your shares, and the reason I jumped up here is because I would sit in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings when I first got sober, and I had a loaded automatic pistol in my top drawer at home, and I thought, you know, if I understand alcohol will kill me, but when I put the plug in the jug, I was dying, and I didn't understand what was wrong with me. And I thought, damn, what anonymous do I go to get help? I'm dying, and I got a loaded gun in my drawer. And I had it in there for the first 3 years I was sober. And finally I grabbed my sponsor and I said, George, can you tell me something? Do I think the things I think and do the things I do because I'm alcoholic? And he said, yes. And I said, can I recover from the way I live? And he said, yes. And I'll tell you, it was like somebody struck chains off me. I was 30 years old. I've been drinking since I was 4 years old. I got sober at 27. I thought, damn, this life is going to be such a burden because I got the plug in the jug and I am as dry as the Sahara Desert. Thank you, God. I'm not taking a thing away from that. That stuff will kill me. But I couldn't get well. And I found out that if I was to share with you what I truly believe to be a very good description of the disease of alcoholism, just look at the bedevilments on page 52. And it doesn't say some of us have this. It says if you got this, you're going to take the ride, and we all have it. Now, to get well from that is worth the price of admission, and I love you. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Hi, my name is Corey Long. I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon. I got here on my two-month wedding anniversary. I'd waited almost 36 years to meet and marry the perfect man. He was a raging alcoholic when I did it, but there was nothing wrong with me. Al-Anon's a really hard place to get to when there's nothing wrong with you. It's really hard to stay when they say if you do, you're going to change. For the first 6 months in the program, I did not think I had a problem. My husband's first sponsor gave him a little sticker that he put on the bathroom mirror that said, you were looking at the problem. And every morning and every night I thought, God, that is so good for Kent. And it took about 6 months for me to go. I went to meetings every single day because that's what they told my husband to do in AA. And he came back after 4 days in treatment and said, I got to go to an AA meeting every day for the first year. And I thought, what am I going to do? I've been married 2 months. And he said, well, you should do an Al-Anon what I do in AA. And that began the process of my husband sponsoring me in Al-Anon. And if you're thinking about doing it, I would not recommend it highly. But what it did was it got me to Al-Anon meetings. I went to an Al-Anon meeting every day for almost a year. I think we missed maybe 6 meetings that first year. And even though there was nothing wrong with me, I was hearing about the disease of alcoholism. I was hearing about the family disease of alcoholism. We were going to an open AA speaker meeting every Saturday night for date night. And I was hearing people talk about the disease of alcoholism. And I couldn't hear anything from him because he'd lied to me so badly about him. I could hear it from everybody else. And I didn't know when I got here I was going to be rocketed into this fourth dimension they talk about. I didn't know that there was anything wrong with me. And when I started cluing in that there was something wrong with me, I was so grateful there was a program that allowed me to recover from the seemingly hopeless state of mind and body that I found myself in, and I don't even drink. And when I was willing to admit that my life was unmanageable, I could start looking at the powerlessness. But I couldn't look at the powerlessness as long as I tried to manage stuff. And as it took about probably 9 months for me to get a sponsor. And when I got that sponsor and I started working those steps, and she was able to point to me that the unmanageability was not the fact that I had a job, I had a house, that I had insurance, that we had a car, that I'd gotten Kent a job. That was not the unmanageability. Yeah, oh yeah, you picked up on that. I got him the job. I managed really well. I just managed everything outside of myself and did not manage anything inside of myself. And she got me to be able to look at, I was going to bed at 5:45 every night with a migraine headache. I would have told you it was my job. It's the family disease of alcoholism. I couldn't face anybody in my family. Somebody on the panel, I looked really good on the outside, but you didn't want to come anywhere close to the inside. That was the unmanageability. I could not manage how I was feeling or what I was doing. And thank God she took me to the second half of the first step so I could then look at the powerlessness in the first step. So I'm really, really grateful to be here. We came up from Alabama, so the South is well represented. This is our family. This is our fellowship. This is the fellowship we crave, and we're grateful to be here. Thanks very much for letting me share.
No more first step experiences. All these people, no first steps.
My name's Art, and I'm an alcoholic. My psychiatrist sent me to AA, and I had 7 years of nominal sobriety. Nominal. I had about 2 ounces of wine over that 7 years, about 3 drops at a time. Long story, but 7 years, and I'm having trouble figuring out this first step stuff because I quit drinking. I was taking credit for it, and I couldn't understand just what is this powerlessness stuff. And I really needed to look back at exactly what had happened to me. The fact is that at 7 years, I had alienated my family. When I walked into a room, my oldest son would get up and walk out immediately. My family had found out it was easier to live without me around when I got a job 100 miles away and told me that. I should have been able to see these signs, right? But I've got a plan, and I've got things under control. So I come into AA, and this wonderful thing happened to me right before I came into AA, right before I talked to my psychiatrist. My second son had his first communion, and we have this book of family prayers. And it suggests that, here's this prayer, put out a piece of bread and some wine, say this prayer, and you're good, right? So we do that, and prayer's done, and nobody wants the wine. Now, a normal person could pour that back in a bottle or pour it down the sink. But I don't know I'm an alcoholic, and I don't know that you can do that stuff. So I figured we're having a meal. I can have that. It's only a half an ounce of wine. And I'm not halfway through that, a quarter ounce of wine for a guy my size, and I start to get that euphoria. 7 years without a drink, and a euphoria starts to come. And the next thought is, how can I get rid of the in-laws so I can start drinking or keep drinking? The next thing that happened was I got this horrible thirst, like worse than I'd ever had before. And I had to get up and go to the sink and have about a quart of water to put that thirst down. And what happened next was that I got nauseated. My body couldn't tolerate alcohol anymore. Without that lesson, I wouldn't have understood. It still took some other things. We're sitting in a club. My sponsor is reading that part in the book where it says, try controlled drinking, right? And I'm still a little uncertain. Am I really, do I belong here or not? And he finally says, and we don't recommend this for everybody, but it worked great for me. You look out the window and there's this bar and grill, and he says, let's go over to the Starlight. I'll buy the first pitcher. And deep down, and I still feel this today, after 10 years, deep down I had this fear. Because I knew that wasn't a good idea. And I knew right where it would take me. 7 years separated from a drink. And I don't want to do that. I just know it's not a good idea. And that cemented it. The rest of the book really put that foundation under me so I could go through with the rest of this stuff and not come up with another plan, which is the way I deal with unmanageability. I got a plan, man. And I'm great at substitute plans when my first one fails. Got a million of them. Thanks.
My name is Jill. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jill.
Hi, everybody. So I recently reread for the millionth time Bill W.'s essay on emotional sobriety. And, you know, when I got here, I came so willingly. I just came and I stayed. And I understood somewhat that I couldn't drink and why. However, I got sober, and I'm only telling you this because it's got to be part of what I'm going to talk about next. I got sober in 1988. In 2005, I woke up one morning, and I was playing spades on the computer, and I thought, why am I doing this? I think I want to drink, and I think I want to die. And when I started taking a look at that, you know, what had happened for me was I really didn't know that I was powerless and my life was unmanageable. I had been given 17 years of grace, and it was up. And I hadn't really done any work. I wasn't really helping anybody because I didn't have anything anybody wanted. And so I don't know why God kept me sober, you know, that day. But I had to get busy. I had to get busy. And I did. People, particular people, were put in my life to show me what happens between the blank page that says I know nothing and page 164. And so, you know, for me, I really feel like my first step happened then. I mean, I had been protected for a long time. I didn't have a liquid problem, I thought, until that day came when I woke up and I hadn't done anything except, you know, go to meetings, fellowship, have fun. Me. And I had to get to work. And so, you know, for me, the unmanageability and the powerlessness, that first step, it's like I got to keep it green every day. And I have to know that, you know, maybe I need to count to five before I open my mouth. Maybe I need to, like, walk through a doorway and say, "Thy will not mine be done." Because without these little reminders, I get running off and I forget how powerless I am over booze, and things get really unmanageable. I'm grateful to be here. And grateful to be sober. And, you know, this step one is, it's like a continuing learning for me. I mean, you know, there's like no maintenance. I mean, some days I wake up and I think, wow, you know, there's this is my pile that I have to deal with, and this is God's pile. It's like there's no Jill's pile. It's all God's pile. And so keeping that green and knowing that, you know, I'm just an arm's length away. Time is not relevant to me because of that experience that I had in terms of, you know, how long I'd been away from booze. It's just not relevant. It's like, what is going to be the quality of my acceptance of powerlessness and unmanageability that really counts in the day? And so I think that's about all I have to share. But in closing, I just want to say that, you know, when we come in, it's that that desperation of knowing there's no place else to go. And, you know, after I've been here for a while, it's that desperation of knowing there's no place else to go. And so thanks for letting me share. Really glad to be here.
Hi everyone, my name's Jeanette and I'm an alcoholic from down under Australia. I've heard some really strange things about powerlessness, and when I first came into AA, someone sat with me with that big book, and I had to get very clear on the physical craving, and I couldn't understand that. I was shaking and I was very, very sick, but I see things in pictures, and how I understood the physical craving was like when America dropped the bomb on Hiroshima, and there's this plane going overhead and this little silver thing goes down and it hits the ground and it goes boom. And that's what my beautiful grog did to me. I'd have a mouthful and it would go right down, deep down within me, and I'd come alive. I'd get the power. And I couldn't stop from doing that every day. And, you know, I heard a lady share before, she went to two doctors. One said she was alcoholic, one said she wasn't. God gives us the most amazing gift in this program to help each other with what is an alcoholic, what is a real alcoholic. We suffer from a physical craving, and it's in the doctor's opinion right at the very beginning. And once I come to terms with that, I believe God pulls me through the rest. You know, I get to see the bedevilments that were, the, you know, my disease. I've got power today. I'm not powerless over anything. God's given me a gift. I came from Australia to come here, and I've been here a couple of times before, and it was people in this country that carried a message to me, and I carry it back home now. I even help Al-Anons out of the big book. I changed the word alcohol to control because they love to control people like us. I had 10 kids, I know that from my experience. And when they couldn't control me, they all left home and left me in bloody peace. And I went, well, thank Christ they've gone. I can friggin' drink in peace now. And then that shame and that guilt. Because when that beautiful Berry's Moselle that I drank, 5 litre casks at a time, I couldn't stop. And the shame and the guilt. That's a real alcoholic. It's so simple. Thanks.
All right. Thank you guys all for participating. By group conscience, the Fellowship of the Spirit Conference does not close each meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Instead, we encourage that the entire conference be treated with an attitude of continuous prayer, and we will then say the Lord's Prayer together at the close of the conference on Sunday. Please help me close this meeting by joining hands for a moment of silence. Let us share our spiritual experiences and strengths with each other so that we may grow together in greater understanding and love.